alms this summer. And it's been really good in many ways, I think. And have had a lot of people with positive comments about how it has blessed them, and that's great. We've dealt with a variety of psalms. Psalms that speak of hope and delight and praise. Psalms that speak of God's comfort and presence. We like those psalms. And then there's those psalms that are written in times of troubles. And we like those too, because when all is said and done, we get the sense God is with us in our troubles. And that's certainly a wonderful thought. But then there's a group of psalms that make us uncomfortable. When the psalmist calls down judgment on his enemies, some of them even including the enemy's babies. And they make us really uncomfortable. At least they make me kind of uncomfortable. I'm going to deal with one of those psalms today. I can't say I was super thrilled with the thought at first, but you know what? It was good for me to wrestle with that and come to grips with that. So we're going to look at one of those this morning. And so look at with me, Psalm 140. There's some beautiful stuff in this psalm, but there's some verses where you go, okay, is that how we should think? So bear with me. Rescue me, Lord, from evildoers. Protect me from the violent, who devise evil plans in their hearts and stir up war every day. They make their tongues as sharp as a serpent's. The poison of vipers is on their lips. Keep me safe, Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Protect me from the violent, who devise ways to trip up my feet. The arrogant have hidden a snare for me. They have spread out the cords of their net and have set traps for me along my path. And I say to the Lord, you are my God. Hear, Lord, my cry for mercy. Sovereign Lord, my strong deliverer, you shield my head in the day of battle. Don't grant the wicked their desires, Lord. Don't let their plans succeed. Those who surround me proudly rear their heads. May the mischief of their lips engulf them. May burning coals fall on them. May they be thrown into the fire, into the miry pits, never to rise. May slanderers not be established in the land. May disaster hunt down the violent. I know that the Lord secures justice for the poor and upholds the cause of the needy. Surely the righteous will praise your name, and the upright will live in your presence. And that's some tough stuff to read in there. There's some real wonderful things in there too, I'm not suggesting, but that verse 9 through 11, some of that gets a little uncomfortable. I have a feeling that a lot of us, when we go through the Psalms, we go to the ones we love and we skip those ones that kind of mess with us. The thing is, there's a number of Psalms that have this feel. Psalm 5, 10, 17, 30, 58, 59, 83, and that's just some of them. They're called imprecatory psalms. Psalms that call judgment on people. Psalms that invoke calamity on the enemies. With contrast, let me read you something out of the New Testament. Look at it with me, Romans 12, where Paul writes, bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice. Mourn with those who mourn. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be proud, but be willing to associate with people of low position. Do not be conceited. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it's possible, as far as depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friend, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, it is mine to avenge. I will repay, says the Lord. On the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. In doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. And here's the question, how do we square these two? How do we square that psalm with that passage out of Romans? Some scholars attempt to deal with this by saying that these were a primitive people. They tended towards violence, so just simply ignore the Psalms and move on. Don't worry about it. It's just an ancient people. Others say, well, Jesus' words trump those passages. David, he was a pretty violent guy too. He said some of this stuff, but Jesus said, love your enemies, so David's words are irrelevant to our lives. We don't have to listen to them anymore. Yet, that kind of doesn't work fully for me. These passages are in the Bible. They are a part of an honest reflection of God's people. Part of our human experiences. Part of our hopes, our fears, our anger. And these Psalms, they weren't put aside by Jesus. Jesus didn't say, and you know, the Old Testament stuff, you know, most of it's fine. I mean, he worked with the Psalms himself. The apostles, they didn't put them aside. Even Paul, who wrote this passage out of Romans. Jesus quotes the Psalms. He even quotes Psalm 69, which is one of these imprecatory judgment-type Psalms. Here's where we start. The overall tone is a real desire, a real sense of wanting God's righteous judgment and justice to happen. You have that? You long for justice? You long for things that are right to overcome things that aren't? That sense is here. So how do we deal with these words? You know, I've said you can use the Psalms as prayers. How do you pray this? I want to talk a little bit. I want to share some thoughts. Not all the thoughts that could be said by a long shot, but I'll give you some. These Psalms, first of all, they express that righteous desire for justice to prevail. We're not simply called to suppress our righteous anger. It needs expression. If you watch the news, maybe some of you have been watching it and you see the racial tension that exists in some of these protests and white supremacists and KKK and, you know, Nazis walking around, along and there's this hatred going on, and or we see terrorist attacks, or we see the abuse of children. It ought to stir in us a sense of righteous anger. It's right to feel angry then. Ephesians 4, I use the version out of the Message because I like it's how it states it. It says, go ahead and be angry, it says in Ephesians 4. Go ahead and be angry. You do well to be angry. But don't use your anger as fuel for revenge. Do not be overcome by evil, because that can happen, but overcome evil with good. And Paul said that in his passages in Romans as well. This is where we have to be careful, where we balance this sense of righteous indignation, righteous anger, but we don't let it bring us to places it shouldn't bring us. This is Jesus seeing the money changers in the New Testament, going in there and flipping tables. Righteous anger that God's house was being used to conduct business in this way, and take advantage of the poor. And he was mad about it, and he did something about it. Some might have looked at him and said, the guy blew a gasket. You know, he's out of control, right? But it was righteous anger. We need to pray about injustice, and we need to seek God's guidance in our lives. And then we need sometimes to act. You know, when we see all these people protesting and racial hatred and holding up, and then there's other people holding up signs about love, and we need to kind of almost step alongside sometimes. Maybe we need to join that protest and say something. That's a bit of an individual choice, but that might be a right act. You know, David in the Psalm, he's battling enemies. He's battling enemies. He's described this. Look at how he describes it in verse 1 through 5 here. He says, rescue me, Lord, from evildoers. Protect me from the violent. who devise evil plans in their hearts, stir up war every day. Their tongues are sharp as serpents. Poison of vipers is on their lips. Keep me safe, Lord, from the hands of the wicked. Protect me from the violent. Right? He's facing this. He's facing these people who intend him harm and who intend to harm God's people. And notice, and here's the thing. So you may not always love David's language, but notice where he goes with it. He goes to God with it. You know, I've said it before, and I really believe it. We tend to sanitize our prayers. We tend to sanitize our prayers. You know, we tend to make them sound so flowery. David doesn't go there. You know, he's laying it out there. He's laying it out there. This is what he's asking of God. But notice, he brings it to God. He brings it to God. He seeks God's deliverance. He acknowledges he needs God. He's a man of war. David was told by God that he wasn't allowed to build God's temple because he had too much blood on his hands. God, it's not you. You can go collect stuff to help build it, but you're not building it. Yet he's called a man after God's own heart. I mean, we're not talking about a perfect man, the whole Bathsheba story, all of that, right? And yet this guy throws his raw prayers out there. This warrior, this guy who knew how to handle himself, he knew he needed the help of God. He knew he needed more than he had. That's amazing to me. I've seen people who walk around in their own strength, and some of that involves such an arrogance they don't even need God. We read verse 8. Do not grant the wicked their desires, Lord. Don't let their plan succeed. I love that in a way. In his prayers, he wants God's plans to succeed. Notice he's not saying, Lord, and make sure my agenda gets met. Make sure my plans succeed. Because you're on my side, right? Lord, may your plans succeed. God had anointed him king of Israel. He had, and David acknowledges that. I'm chosen by God. I need God to guide me. His agenda, his plan, his purposes. In a sense, to attack David was to attack the will of God. Here you see David as a man, he desires for God to be glorified. He desires for God's name to be lifted high. And so he prays. He prays for safety for himself. He prays for God to be glorified. And then he prays for his enemies. He prays judgment on them. That makes me somewhat uncomfortable. But even in the New Testament, because you know, remember that line, right? Pour burning oil on their heads, right? It's like, woo. Or pour oil on their, you know, and in the New Testament, we get that verse once too. But in the New Testament, the intent is when you do all this good stuff, it'll be like that. Oil, burning oil on their heads, right? it's a slightly different motive there. David lives in a different time, but I think we share similar experiences. I mean, how many of you, when you hear some of the atrocities of ISIS, you know, you hear them, they lop some people's head off on a video. How many of you want them wiped out? I don't even know how to feel about that sometimes. But I get it. Or how many of you, you know, you see some horrendous story of abuse and you know, you want that abuser to feel it. You know, we face opposition in our own lives. We live in a world where there's sometimes real violence and hate. I remember reading a book about a modern-day martyrs in the world. And how there's more people martyred for their faith now than any time in history. We always kind of think that those days are over. You know, the book talks about tens of thousands of people martyred for their faith. We live in a violent world. And then the psalmist talks about the, you know, in verse 3, he talks about they make their tongue sharp as serpents, and then poison is on their lips. And then I think of Jesus, you know, when he talked to the religious leaders in his day, and he said, you religious leaders, you use your words like a viper, like a snake. You're like a whitewashed grave. And I think, wow, imagine that congregational meeting. You think of gossip. You think of slander. How much devastation has occurred when we talk about others behind their backs to demean and diminish them? You think of social media and the horrendous stuff that can be said on social media because you're hiding behind a screen. It's poison. And like David, I think in those moments we need to bring our grievances, we need to bring our hurts, we need to bring them to the Lord first. That's where he starts. And then we acknowledge our need. I'm not strong enough to deal with this. Lord, you have to give me the strength to deal with this. You are able. We aren't. We need to have a place where we grieve arrogance, where we grieve violence, where we grieve evil within us and without. My own sin should anger me. Yeah, we long for a world. We long for a world where justice wins in our own lives and in the lives around us. I long for this place to be a place of love and justice. A place where broken crap doesn't happen. I long for it to be that place. But you know what? It's not going to be that way. Because we live in a fallen world. So we need to walk through it together somehow. And I don't always know what that looks like. But that's the gospel story. We trust a God who overcomes evil. That's what we're doing. I was thinking, you know, John 3:16, for God so loved the world, he gave his only son. Let's turn that around just slightly. Let's rewrite it in a negative sense. And I mean this like this. For God so hated, so despised the effect of evil and sin that he sent his only son. It's the same thing. For God so loved because he hated evil. It's both. We have this weird idea that love is almost like soft, being soft on evil. It isn't. We use words in religious language. God reconciled. What does reconcile mean? God redeemed. What does redeemed mean? It means taking something that wasn't right and making it right. That's what it is. That's what God invites us to be in on, in this gospel story. That's gospel. When God said, I have come to make all things new, that's what we're in on. But making things new means acknowledging some things need to be made new. And so, we face these things and we seek then God's guidance. We bring it to God so we can act. And then we acknowledge, and this is critically important, we acknowledge then that God is the judge. We leave it in his hands. We put our trust in his righteous justice. And you know what that lets us do? Then we are in a place where we can much more easily love our enemies. If ultimate judgment is left in the hands of God where it should be, it leaves us in a place where we don't have to act like judges. And we can then attempt to love our enemies as best we know how. You know, you notice here David isn't asking for God to let him get even. He's saying, God, it's in your hands. He leaves it with God. It's not about his personal vengeance. It's not about you and I getting to be judge. Not at all. You know, you remember the story with David. King Saul is trying to hunt him down. And because King Saul doesn't want David to become king. And God has anointed David. And so Saul wants to rid himself of the competition. And he'd been hunting David down. And David's hiding in his cave. But Saul doesn't know that. And Saul goes into the cave and he takes a nap because it's nice and cool in there. And there's David, knife in hand, enemy laying right there. Would have been such an easy thing. We're done. Would have been simple. Problem solved. But instead, he cuts the corner of his cloak off, and then later on, he goes away, and David comes out of the cave and says, King Saul, here I am, but let me tell you a story first. You were sleeping here. I could have cut your throat, but you know what? I didn't. Why? Because I leave you in God's hand. And that's the point. We need to leave people in God's hands. And then in the meantime, we love even our enemies. And that may, again, I don't want to sugarcoat love. That may be some hard truth sometime because we speak the truth in love. But when we speak it in judgment, it's a whole different story. It's a whole different story. We leave it to God, and then we're free to love. You know what? If you don't do this, you know what ends up happening so often? You turn bitter. You sit there and look down your nose at everybody. You have all these stories about you could even have stories about the good old days when it was all good and how crappy it is now and how bad it is now and on you go and you just, you judge. And the weird thing is you're not happy either. You get consumed by it. I want to be able to rest. I want to be able to rest in the fact that God calls me to bring his love, and then operate out of that. And that might mean hard truth with somebody sometimes. That's okay. I just want my motive to be one of love. And that's not always easy. You know, we pray, your will be done, Lord. But then we also pray that I forgive as I've been forgiven. And that's part of God's will. And this isn't about, again, I want to state again, this isn't about you being a doormat. This isn't about you having a blind eye to what's wrong. Love does seek justice. Love does seek truth. Love battles evil within and without. That's a challenge. But it is a battle about the renewal of all things. And then we read in verse 12 and 13 where the psalmist ends. He says, I know that the Lord secures justice for the poor. Notice who's doing the work. The Lord secured justice for the poor. He upholds the cause of the needy. Surely the righteous will praise your name, because that's the point. And the upright will live in your presence. And when we live in his presence, we'll live in a good place. We trust God to keep his promises to overcome evil and bring good. And when we read the Psalms like this, we are reminded God is just, but we're also reminded he is also of immense mercy. We never, and I've said it last week when we talked about God as Father, we never let one image of God be the end all. God reveals himself as Father. He reveals himself, we see it in the Psalms, as Shepherd. He reveals himself as Warrior. He reveals himself as Rock. He reveals himself as Judge. It's all those things. It's all those things. God is teaching you who he is. But keep this in mind. God must, by his very nature, he must hate evil and sin and brokenness because it's contrary to what is holy. Look at some verses I threw on your outline. Romans 3. Look at it with me. This redeeming justice comes through the faithfulness of Jesus, the Anointed One, the liberating King, who makes salvation a reality for all who believe, without the slightest partiality. You see, all have sinned, and all their futile attempts to reach God in His glory fail. We meet God on His terms and His terms alone. Romans 5:10. For if, while we were God's enemies, please hear that. This psalm talks about enemies. Guess who the enemy is? Us. At least we were. While we were God's enemies. Why? Why were we enemies? Because we were contrary to the holiness of God. While we were enemies, we were reconciled to Him through the death of His Son. How much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through His life? And so, He, in His judgment and mercy, sent His Son. We're going to have communion. And in this, we come to the cross where perfect justice and perfect mercy meet. That's the good news. Somehow in Jesus, those two are perfectly brought together. Colossians says it rather well. I chose it out of the message. It says, not only that, and notice here, by the way, the depth of salvation. It isn't just you and I. I mean, that's important already, but notice this. Not only that, but all the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms, get properly fixed and fit together in vibrant harmonies, all because of His death. I love that. His blood that poured down from the cross. You yourselves are a case study of what He does. At one time, you had all your backs turned to God, thinking rebellious thoughts of Him, giving Him trouble every chance you got. But now, by giving Himself completely at the cross, actually dying for you, Christ brought you over to God's side and put your lives together whole and holy in His presence. That's what we celebrate with communion. That's what we celebrate. We who were enemies of God have become children of the Father. That's the good news. We who didn't have a place at the table are invited to sit as family members. Jesus spoke words of the Psalms in His life because He loved the Father and He desired the kingdom to come in all its fullness. He desired His Father's name to be glorified. He desired that the effects of sin and brokenness be overcome. And He goes to the cross. Why? Because we needed deliverance. So we can go from enemies of God to being children of the King. I'd like to invite, and we're going to be singing a song in a moment here so that the kids who are going to partake can have a chance to get down here.